Welcome, everyone, to the Screamcast, episode 39. We're into December, people. You know what that means.
We're going
to be talking Christmas.
How long? Sleigh bells.
How long can I do these sleigh bells?
You can probably stop.
Okay. So we're into December, and we figured we'd do something special throughout the month. We'll be bringing in a Christmas horror title to discuss, along with another movie. So today we're talking Raw Force, otherwise known as Kung Fu Cannibals, and then we'll be talking Christmas Evil.
Christmas Evil.
Yeah, so two Vinegar Syndrome titles, and I know Brad
now
has his pants open.
Pants? Yeah. They're not even on.
I'm your host, Sean DeRager. With me, of course, Brad Henderson. And stop the presses, Brian Sauer is with us today. So, goddamn.
What is happening? What is happening, gentlemen?
Happy,
sorry
happy
for my long
show.
Absence. It's nice to be back.
We, you know, after the car malfunction episode, you know, we were like, I don't know. Well, the great sprinkler incident.
Yeah.
We were unsure if you would ever return. So we're glad to have you back.
Yeah. No, it's all good, man. It's all good. Sitting in my car in the dark. That's what I do.
The things we all do for this podcast.
Ugh.
Brad, I don't know what Brad does. But I'm just talking about getting up early and, you know, at odd times. That's about it.
Sounds like you got it hard.
Yep. So so we're into December. Guys, have you started doing the Christmas stuff? I do the Christmas stuff right after Thanksgiving. Like the next 2 days after, it's Christmas time.
Well, we did stuff at my parents' house. Pulled out like the help them pull out all their Christmas stuff, put up Christmas lights, stuff like that.
We don't always do it, but I think we're going to try and do it this year. Maybe today even.
Oh. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, we pulled everything out last night, and it was organized chaos, but the kids dug it, so it's all about the kids, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's fun to watch them. They get super excited over stuff like that.
Makes for a very nice photo, Sean. I saw that.
It does. Yep. And we're doing our family photo around this time every year when we can, and it's family photo day today. So, you know, good times. So we all celebrate Christmas here, right? There's no one has a crazy religion where they disown Christmas every year.
No.
No.
Yeah, that's good. You know, yeah.
I don't like how people act too much, like, you know, the general public.
But civilians.
Yeah, those civilians.
What do they do?
Peons,
what do they do?
Out there.
Give us an example, Brad.
Well, I mean, just like the whole Black Friday thing.
Okay.
And,
oh yeah.
You know,
yeah.
People just like, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's why Christmas has always, it's always been really contained in my family. Like Christmas is at our house. It's not like, you know, every time you go, like people are just, I don't know. It seems like people are just tired and irritable. You know, because of the holidays, because it stresses them out.
Yeah.
You know, about gifts. And it's just like, you know, we've had a couple, like, not so good Christmases in my family because of, like, you know, family stuff and everything like that. So we're very, like, close family oriented with our Christmases. Like, we, you know, get together and we just stay in the house. We stay away from all, like, the bullshit just because, you know, we get tired of just hearing, you know, people complain, I didn't get this, I didn't get that. Well, who gives a fuck? I mean, my dad had, you know, surgery, life and death surgery on Christmas Day 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, I really don't give a shit what I get. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, I mean, it's all, mostly it's about little kids. Like, just fun for the kids, you know?
Yep.
As an adult, it's just to the point where it's just, oh, great, it's Christmas. You know.
I always look at the bank account and then how many days I got left and then how many paychecks I'm getting. And
then how much you can spend on Blu-rays.
And I just, no, I'm talking about just spending on my kids. but yeah, no, it's good. We have fun. I think once you have kids, Christmas totally, I think, changes. And yeah, for us, it's all about giving the kids a really good Christmas, no matter like, no matter how much we have that year, like, the kids always have a blast. And so it's good. All right. So today, we're going to be talking, like I said, Raw Force and then Christmas Evil. But I believe, Brad, you have some Blu-ray announcements for us. So we can jump right into that.
Do you like what you see?
I love what I see.
Would you like to touch what you see?
Yes. Yes, I would.
Are you ready?
I'm ready, man. Lay them on me.
Well, today, Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror from Scream come out. The Quartermass Experiment from Kino comes out. And Universal's As Above, So Below found footage movie that takes place in Paris. I haven't seen it yet, but I've actually heard pretty good things about it. So check it out. It's the guy that directed Devil, the remake of REC, Quarantine, and the hard-to-find still Poughkeepsie Tapes. That's pretty amazing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I heard about the Poughkeepsie Tapes. That never got a...
Well, it got some kind of digital release like a few months ago, and like so it's not, you don't have to bootleg it or download it. But for, I mean, the longest time, I mean, that movie suffered so much because like the only way to get it was through like torrent or, you know, like a YouTube or just bum a copy off of somebody because it was unavailable. So yeah, I mean, I saw it years ago as a bootleg. I think I even downloaded it.
Yeah.
Just because I, you know, I really wanted it. And, I mean, I love that movie to death. I think it's like, it definitely has flaws, big flaws, because it's so, you know, small and independent. I mean, it's mostly the acting, but man, when that creepy stuff happens, dude, that movie is terrifying at times.
Yeah.
It's really, really good. So yeah, another found footage by, this guy. You know, I thought – I didn't like the remake of REC too much with his Quarantine.
No.
But it did have a couple cool elements. I think he knows how to handle found footage, so I'm kind of excited to see this one. And, of course, Shockwaves came out like last week. I think it came out like on a Thursday, right?
No, I got mine on a Tuesday.
Oh, you did?
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe I just had the wrong date. All right. As for new things being announced – Horns from Anchor Bay is coming out January 6th. Daniel Radcliffe. I saw this film. It's I really, really liked it. I thought it really worked, but the last 10 minutes of that movie ruins it completely for me.
Oh no, man! I hate when that happens.
Yeah, and I just like I was on board. Like it's very bizarre. You know, and I really want to read the Joe Hill novel, because I read his like Nosferatu, I read his other one, but you know, going into Horns, I saw it at Fantastic Fest, and I really, really dug it. And a lot of people said it didn't work because of the whole aspect, because there's like this weird comedic aspect to it. But in a way, yes, it is funny, but I really think it grabs how people are in real life. Not to give it anything away, but the plot is this guy, Daniel Radcliffe's character, wakes up and he's got horns on his head one day. And whoever he comes in contact with are completely honest people. Like, they get straight, completely honest. They just say whatever's on their mind. So he brings out, I would say, the worst in people. And yes, it is kind of comical of things that happen, but he brings out the person's like true inner self. And while that's funny at times and people are laughing and stuff like that, it's like, that's how people really are though, because I truly believe people aren't 100% honest at all at any time.
Yeah.
Like right now you're probably saying, Brad, why don't you shut the fuck up? But you're not, you're saying it. So I know. But anyways, you know, Ant Horns is a decent film. I just didn't care for the last bit. And I think Alexandre Aja is a really good director, of course. You know, he brought us the remake of The Hills Have Eyes. You know, he wrote P2. He did Mirrors. That's kind of fun. What other? Oh, High Tension, of course. Duh.
Oh, yeah, man.
So, yeah, he's got a very particular style that looks really, really good. Very 80s, I would say. It's, like, nice and gritty. I don't know what – I think he shot Horns digitally, though. But anyways, that's beside the point.
So, Aja did Horns? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Are you questioning me?
No,
you're gonna make me look it up because he did it. You made me like.
I know,
the way you presented that was.
I'm surprised. I didn't. I didn't realize he did. You know, for some reason, I had no idea.
Yeah, no, me neither. Yeah. I didn't know.
Oh well, there you go.
So would you say even though the last 10 minutes are let down, would you say it's worth at least someone renting and checking out?
Yes.
It's Aja, so I mean, I'll watch anything he does.
Yeah, I mean, he has, like he does have this style, like with High Tension and The Hills Have Eyes. Like both of those films are really gritty and, very stylistic in an 80s sense of, you know, just bringing out colors, blood, stuff like that. Like his movies look really, really good. They're shot, they're framed, they're almost perfect, you know. Mm-hmm. Mears, on the other hand, was kind of like, you know, still very 80s, but very cliche.
Yeah.
Like very predictable. Yes, it was fun, but I've seen that movie 1,000 times. So there wasn't anything. And I thought his remake of Piranha was really, really great because he did that same thing, you know. And I think that's what brings – with Horns, it's kind of the same thing again. It's very stylistic. It's very throwback without considering it throwback, you know? So I dig it quite a bit.
Cool.
So, it comes recommended. And then February 3rd, Starry Eyes is released by MPI. I highly suggest that one completely.
Is that ABC's a release?
Yes. Yes. ABC's A Death 2 is coming out. It's another film that I cannot recommend at all.
Oh, bummer.
Because the funny thing was with this ABC The Death 2, I know the first one got a lot of flack.
I hated it. There was like maybe three. The one with like the robot type stuff was super cool. But everything else, man, I just hated it.
Yeah.
The claymation aspect was kind of funny, but a lot of it was just like toilet humor and gross out humor, and it was just like kind of just went too far, and I didn't enjoy myself. But who did that robot segment with that you know what I'm talking about?
It was the like the pregnancy, like the birthing one.
I don't know, it was a robot that I think the robot kills a baby, like that was like, oh my god.
Yeah, but, they were hunting like newborns or something,
but the effects and everything, because I know they're on a shoestring budget. Like that thing, I was like, this director has something.
I think it was like Kara Andrews. I don't know how you pronounce his first name.
Right.
But he directed Altitude and the new Cabin Fever movie.
Okay.
I think it's the same guy.
Yeah.
I want to say it is. I don't know.
Yeah. But most of it, I just thought I was just, I don't know, just kind of, I didn't really enjoy myself.
Brian, how about you, Brian?
Never saw it. I I heard, you know, mostly what you guys have said, which is like handful of decent or to okay and mostly crap, literally and figuratively. So I was kind of like, meh, you know, I just didn't really feel like wading through.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think the first one, there's some, but I agree with it. It's very discombobulated. There's no flow to it. They literally gave every director like $5,000 and said, do something. So when you get that, you just get this barrage of just like weird and lame and action packed, just all these different types of things. And it doesn't flow. Because we're watching a bunch of short films.
It's a macabre short film.
But there's no flow. I personally, when I first saw ABC's Death, I was like, oh, wow, that was very, you know, underwhelming because I was expecting a lot more. But I do like probably – I really like about 10 of the segments. That's about it. And when I saw ABC's Death 2, I was like, okay, I think they got their shit sorted out because like during the interview with the – you know, with Tim and like Ant Thompson, they were saying – you know, we got the, you know, everything, everybody said everything about the first one. We kind of molded this a little bit better. And dude, I hated it. Like, I honestly don't remember liking one segment in that whole entire thing. Hmm. And everybody was like, oh man, it flows so much better. It's so good. I'm like, I don't understand. I don't know if we saw the same thing or if that's what you guys want is just something very tame. Because personally, I want batshit craziness. Yeah. But I mean, I don't like the, you know, I'm really glad they didn't do any of the like the sushi typhoon, you know, fart and vagina Japanese things that happened. But anyways, ABC's of Death 2 comes out February 3rd. The Beyond, a 3-disc collection by the Grindhouse releasing is coming out, which is, that's pretty cool soundtrack, all that kind of thing.
I got mine pre-ordered.
Yeah, if you already don't have the Arrow release, that's probably going to be something you want to pick up. Don't Look Now by Craig. What are you going to say, Sean?
I was going to say, I think DiabolicDVD.com is doing some sort of special. If you pre-ordered, you get another DVD that's normally worth like $25 for like $5.
Oh, that's cool.
Add-on. I can't remember which one it is, though, but I pre-ordered mine before that offer. But anyway, if you can pre-order it through DiabolicDVD.com. Right now, I think it's exclusively through them.
Yeah.
Anyway, proceed.
And then Criterion's releasing Don't Look Now, which I think that's already had a DVD release, but it's coming out on Blu-ray on February 10th.
I got an import of that. I can't remember if it's Optimum.
I think it's Optimum.
Yeah, that sounds right. But I mean, I'll totally get the Criterion, too. It's a cool flick.
Yeah, it's a good
one. Nice. Movie. I didn't realize they were doing Criterion was doing that. That's awesome.
Yeah. Criterion's, they're going through like every month they're pulling out some old catalog titles and putting them on Blu-ray. Yeah. And I think that's really cool because a lot of companies don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they just focus on new releases. But I guess Criterion makes their cash for that. Which is surprising that people buy them because we put forth so much money on the DVDs and now we're converting over a lot of people. So that's, I think that's a lot. You know, that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. So I just don't see money being made in that, but apparently I'm wrong.
Criterion is one of those companies that has its fans, like people will buy whatever they release.
People blind buy all the time because we're used to good movies. So it's, that's nice. Bad news on two titles here. They're still coming out, but they've been pushed back. God Told Me To by Blue Underground is now February 24th. Well, that was scheduled for January. And Wolf Cop got pushed back to May.
Ugh.
What?
Yeah, I got my Amazon notice. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out in January or whatever, February. It should get pushed back. I have no idea why Image is doing that.
The DVD's still coming out early, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought was really weird.
Huh.
It must have been a Blu-ray authoring issue. There must have been some issues with the, I don't know, the company. No.
Just get
the
UK one, guys, because that's going to come. I think that's already out soon, or already out. But anyways, that's the Blu-ray announcements.
Cool. I wanted to bring up Exists, because that got the Blu-ray. They announced the Blu-ray's coming out.
Oh, wait, they did?
Or not Blu-ray, DVD.
DVD.
That's what I meant, yeah. DVD. And that was my, I don't have the, do you have when the DVD's been released?
I have a press release for it, but I can't remember.
Yeah, I'm trying to look, but it's for some reason only getting a DVD release, and for me that was a little bit disappointing. I know February 3rd, and so it's coming out on DVD like $19.98 is the suggested retail, and it comes with an HD digital download or code or whatever. Which was really odd. I was like, why don't they just press it on Blu-ray and be done with it, you know, and some sort of double pack, you know. But believe this is Lionsgate who's releasing it?
I can't. Yeah.
I want to say it's Lionsgate.
Yeah, Lionsgate. Yes.
So Ed Sanchez was really disappointed. Like he even took to Facebook saying that he was, you know, had no idea why. He was really disappointed that they weren't giving it a Blu-ray release. But that is coming out on February 3rd. I'm excited to watch it, but instead of buying it now, I'll probably just stream it, you know, because I was just going to, I'd heard such good things, I was going to buy it on Blu-ray, and I'm kind of done buying DVDs if I don't have to, and so I'm kind of, I'll rent this and I guess hold out, hopefully, you know, eventually they put it on Blu-ray, but that was a bit disappointing to me. What do you guys think when companies do this?
I mean, I'm used to it because I get a lot of press stuff in the mail. And I'm always getting DVDs, and then I watch them, and I'm like, God, like, why? Like, this is Blu-ray, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, it would look good on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Like, there's no doubt. I mean, exists? No. I kind of agree with the whole Lionsgate thing approaching a because I know, like, Blu-ray is kind of like the thing now. That's what people want. But is it worth it for them to press Blu-rays and DVDs for a film that's going to look exactly the same, like, on DVD, and maybe it might look a little bit better on Blu-ray, but, like, it's a found footage Bigfoot movie. Like, there's not really no point to it that I would see it on Blu-ray as a, like, a money standpoint. Yes, yeah. I would prefer it on there, of course. But, I mean, fucking Lionsgate's notorious for releasing DVDs. Like, they release so many DVDs. Like, they don't give things Blu-rays a lot. I mean, they're not as bad as IFC, of course. But, you know, it's just something I just don't see being, you know, a Blu-ray release.
What did he – do you know what they shot on? Was it just like, you know, digital video or
– I think it's the same – I think it's the same as they shot it – yeah, digital – what they filmed Lovely Molly on.
Okay.
Because he did Ed Sanchez did Lovely Molly, and it kind of has a found footage esque feel to it too. I mean, cause some of it is found footage,
yeah.
But you know, and it looks good. I mean, I'm a little perturbed too. It's not on Blu-ray, but from Lionsgate standpoint, it's probably not going to be, I mean, think about how many fucking Bigfoot movies we have right now. Like there's so many. I mean, literally, like, was Hunting the Legend. There was the Bigfoot up – that, like, alien Bigfoot movie that came out. Spoiler alert. you know, we have
Bobcat
Exists.
Bobcat Goldthwait's? What was
yeah,
that one?
Yeah, Willow Creek.
Willow Creek, yeah, there you go.
You know, and even – it's funny that because we're saying that because John Portanova, the guy that wrote The Invoking, and we're going to have him on again to promote his movie The Device, his movie he did is a Bigfoot movie. So, I mean, I like Bigfoot. I do. It's just, man, there's so many damn Bigfoot movies coming out.
Yeah, I feel like it's always tons of Bigfoot movies, but, like, never, no one ever kind of gets it, you know?
Well, they try to put a new spin on everything.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, like, I can't think of the fucking Bigfoot movie, the alien Bigfoot movie right now. But anyways, like it was weird because we have a Bigfoot movie, big CGI, Bigfoot, and then aliens show up. And it's like, oh shit, alien Bigfoot. That's new, but that's lame as shit. But I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. But there's a bunch of, like, I don't know. We'll ask our fans, like, on Twitter and Facebook, but maybe we could start doing, like, a VOD segment too, because there's a lot of stuff on VOD that won't get Blu-ray release for probably a while, you know, because right now the norm is VOD first, and then months later it gets you know, a Blu-ray or a DVD release. And sometimes, like, these things don't get Blu-ray releases, so we kind of skip over them a little bit, you know, but there's
Well, yeah. If there's something worth mentioning, and it's only on VOD, heck yeah, you know.
Yeah, because I know, like, Late Phases right now.
Oh yeah,
is on VOD, and I can't recommend that movie enough.
Here's great.
Yeah, I love Late Phases. Bogliano is a great director. Nick D'Amici's a great actor. Ethan Embry's in it, of course, and he's always fun. But yeah, it's something to check out. Cool. We'll mull that over. Maybe toss we'll
it.
Do that.
We'll toss it around.
Yeah, because people like VOD. I like to, you know, weekend rent a couple movies, watch them over the weekend. You know.
Yeah.
So, but anyways,
cool. All right,
let's fucking start talking some Vinegar Syndrome.
Oh my god, oh my god, guys, Raw Force. You know.
Big John Taylor, mercenary, soldier of fortune. He's more than a man. He's a walking death machine. Candy O'Perrin, sexy undercover cop. Her deadliest weapon is her body. Mike O'Malley, Hollywood's top stuntman.
What do you want us to do?
Fight our champions.
Only this time, the action's for real. And Rick Chan, black belt, primed for action with one blow, the death blow. Only two words describe the power and fury of this unstoppable team, raw force. Join them as their carefree vacation cruise turns into hell on the high seas.
What was that?
Final port of call. Warrior Island. Uncharted and unexplored.
We should not be here.
Burial grounds for martial arts masters from the past. Their resting places defiled. They rise from the dead to avenge their honor. Who will win? The living or the living dead? Join John Dresden, Gillian Kesner, Jeff Binney, Raymond King, and Cameron Mitchell. As they band together with the incredible power of raw force, untamed and unleashed to kill.
Cameron Mitchell. It's weird that Cameron Mitchell's in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
All right, so Vinegar Syndrome.
Yes.
They have been on a roll, I feel. And the two movies we're going to be talking about today, starting with Raw Force, I feel like no other company really wanted to touch these, maybe. I mean, maybe Christmas Evil, maybe, but movie...
Synapse released Christmas Evil on DVD a few years ago.
But Raw Force, man, I had never seen this movie. This came out in July 1982, and like I said earlier, originally titled Kung Fu Cannibals, and I think I just had no idea what to expect with this flick, but I had a ripping good time in this movie. As you can see, if on my Twitter, I changed it to the bartender at the party.
That guy is amazing,
dude. That party scene.
The party. I think the party scene did it for me. I don't even know where to start with this movie. The plot basically is a yacht full of some martial art masters guys. They're trying to make it to a certain to Warriors Island.
Burbank Karate Club.
Burbank Karate Club.
Burbank Karate Club, baby.
I don't even know. Who wants to take the synopsis and let us kind of set us up here? Because this movie's all over the place, but it's amazing.
There's martial arts students that are going to this Warriors Island, where there's I guess martial artists that have died in, like, without honor, I guess you could say, and there's like this slavery. Underground slavery ring, and they all meet up and they fight. There you go.
Yeah, that's kind of it.
We have a Hitler lookalike. We have a thug with a most amazing rat tail ever. I mean, it's epic rat tail. It's almost donkey tail. And yeah, samurai zombies,
ninja zombies,
ninja Spoiler. Zombies too. An amazing party scene. Let's talk about the party scene, because that thing's amazing. So,
well, I mean, in going back before we dip into the amazing party scene, which I agree.
Oh my god, guys!
This movie is very. Just a bunch of scenes put together, it seems. I mean, it's not bad. Like, this is a very, very fun movie. Whether you like, you know, Criterion movies and you're very proper and you don't watch crap, you'll like this movie. If you like the craziest batshit things possible, you're going to love this movie. I don't know. This is one thing that I've seen. I think I first saw Raw Force a couple years ago. I watched it with a buddy of mine, Brian Knowles, who is the Andrew Davis expert. We just put it on one day and we were like, holy crap, like this is great. You know, it builds up. You give it just a little bit of time, but once, like, just the dialogue, just the weird scenes that just the fight scenes that happen, the choreography, like it's just really, it's just a mixture. It's a genre, it's like a genre mashup,
yeah,
of, you know, a martial arts movie mixed with stupidity.
But and quite a bit of nudity.
Oh my! I wasn't prepared, gentlemen.
Lingering nudity.
I had like my back windows open. I was watching the movie.
And I
was like, you know what? If my neighbor looks through his bedroom window into my house, he's gonna wonder what the fuck is going on and what the hell am I? What is this guy watching? What is Sicko Sean watching over there? You know.
Something good. That's what.
he'd probably grab his binoculars and start watching too.
But I really do think since you mentioned the party scene after, like, it's not when they're very first on the ship up top doing like little kung fu, but it's actually the party like in the cabin. Like this cabin looks like it's like a bedroom, but they're having like the biggest party known to man.
Yeah,
in this small little area. But that's definitively when the film actually gets really, really good is from there on out, because you have, you know, the pirates that basically – yeah, there's pirates kind of. They take over the ship. And once that happens, then we actually really, really get flowing. But, it's just that they were – it really feels in this movie that they were just making up things right before they said action.
Yeah.
And especially during that party scene, and like, you know, just the diet, like the guy, the really sleazy guy. Then when she introduces him, what does he say? You know what I'm saying? Like he's like the good looking guy.
Right.
What does she say to him?
I don't know. There's so many
lines.
I wish I wrote everything down because I mean there's just so many one liners. But my all time favorite is when the bartender breaks the fucking ice at his face.
Yeah, she asks him for ice. Can I get something on the rocks? He all of a sudden backs up, and he has this. He's bald on top, but he has this amazing red fro. Long hair to his shoulders and amazing chops, you know, like, or what, I don't know,
sideburns,
facial hair. It's
corn
incredible.
Stash.
Totally.
Yep.
And he backs up, screams, and breaks a slab of ice with his forehead and then puts some chunks of ice into her drink.
Now, which is very sanitary.
Yeah. But like I watched the sequence a couple times, like doesn't the block of ice like kind of come out of nowhere?
Yeah,
like he's standing behind the bar and then suddenly he breaks it and then he's behind the bar again. It's awesome, don't get me wrong.
That bar is like for midgets though. Like it's very low.
Little people, Brad, little people.
Oh, sorry, damn.
Son of a bitch.
We lost like 1.5 listeners.
Oh.
That's hilarious.
That was fucked up.
This party's crazy, and people, of course, as it felt kind of like an 80s party scene, like high school party scene, where you'd have a couple get dragged away and stuff would go down. And there's the one scene where there's the guy who's the woman's just all about having some sex and he doesn't want to or something. And he says, like, I teach third grade, you know, and
oh, yeah. Like he's like all proper, like this guy's. Yeah. Married and has like 3 kids and lives in like white suburbia, but he's like has this like nympho that's trying to like do his balls and he is like not interested and starts bringing up weird shit.
Yeah, there's just so many gems in that scene that really seriously, guys, like all I needed to see was that scene. And I mean, it's almost like the movie wasn't as good after that, as entertaining. Because that scene is so out there and ridiculous, and the nudity is ridiculous. I don't think I was like, what rating is this? You know,
it definitely feels like that sort of lingering obligatory nudity where you're just like,
it's just
they hang on it almost a little too long. And not to say that that's a bad thing, but it's like then at a certain point you're just like, okay, but they were just fighting and that was cool too. Can we go? Okay, we're gonna hang out on this tit shot for okay, all right, that's fine.
And there's also a little bit earlier they're in a bar. And it's supposed to be a strip club or something, but there's only one nude chick dancing on the bar.
Yep.
And it does that awkward lingering, and it goes back to her a few times. Just there's a fight breaking out in the bar, and she's still dancing. It's just And then, well, but then after the party scene, all that stuff stops and there's no more ridiculous nudity. And then we're into like basically another type of movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to talk about all the funny parts. Let's talk about who's in this fucking movie for
okay,
a second.
Okay. Let's do it.
Fucking Cameron Mitchell. Yes. Mm-hmm. He's been in horror films. I mean, his last movie was a horror film, for Christ's sakes. But like, I know Brian is very, very diverse with, like, you know, really old movies. But, like, how weird is it when we have, like, really well notable actors that, you know, have been in, you know, some of the best, like, classics.
Right.
That end up doing, you know, just these weird off-the-wall stuff like Raw Force. Because I know – There's a movie called Evils of the Night. Have you ever seen that?
Didn't somebody just put that out, right? Again.
Yeah, yeah. Gorgon Video put it out.
Yes. I totally want to check that out. It sounds pretty nuts.
But fucking Aldo Ray and Neville Brand are both in the movie.
Well, yeah, and
like,
then
– it's like how many times – I mean, we see that all the time. But it's just odd that – they get these people to be in these movies.
And the role he's playing, too.
Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. It's like...
The Hitler lookalike.
Wait, no. Right? He's the ship captain.
He's the ship captain? Captain. Oh, no. I suck. Sorry, guys.
No. It's all good, dude.
No,
that guy's awesome.
Who the hell plays him?
That guy's awesome.
I'm probably a nobody. But no, he plays Captain
Dobbs.
Okay,
yeah, the ship captain. Yeah. My bad.
But I mean, it's just weird of like how this actually turns up and comes about of them going to these notable actors and saying, "Hey, you want to do a zombie movie where you do kung fu on a boat and there's a lot of titties?" Like, I wonder, like, when they're presented this script and they're presented this idea, like, they have some of the best, like, sleazy guys just building up this movie. It's like, all right, listen, what you're going to do is you're going to be a martial artist and you're going to just save the day. And then they go to the theater during opening night and they're just seeing this awful, like, just weird, violent movie with a bunch of titties.
Yeah, well, see, I would bet that the titties aren't necessarily in the script, you know, per se.
Right, that was probably
because
all...
so he may sign on to, you know, this kung fu movie thriller, if you will, I guess, and then go see. But you know, he's done so much. I don't want to say crap, but like,
I guess he's not the best person.
No, that's not a bad. I don't disagree though that he's still a high profile guy, you know. But I was just looking at his IMDb and I was forgetting like how much crazy stuff he's done. You know, he's an interesting guy, and that's actually just one of my favorite things, really, in general, is to see like. You know, what's the Scream Factory Without Warning? You know, you got Jack Palance and, oh man, what's his name? Martin Landau. You know what I mean? I love that late career, yeah, sure, I'll do that kind of, you know, career decision kind of thing.
I don't know.
Because that was when I started noticing that kind of stuff. At first, I was just like, well, that's interesting. And then I just started to think about the actors more as like, people and people that have to, you know, at a certain point, you know, the residuals maybe start to dry up a little bit. They gotta continue to work, you know, and as opposed to taking a 9-to-5 job, they just kind of keep doing their thing, and it leads to some very interesting choices, you know,
and
they become less prideful about it. And that's not a bad thing. I think that's great. I think I actually really like it when an actor decides to do something like this, because I don't know. There's just something not so stuck up about it that I just think, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned Without Warning.
Yeah, he's in
fucking
it.
Cameron Mitchell.
That's right. Cameron Mitchell's in that too. I forgot about that. Yeah.
And he's in Night Train to Trayer.
Yeah, that's right.
But like, I mean, yeah, he has done a decent amount of horror films later on, like after, like when the 80s hit.
Mm-hmm.
But it's funny that, you know, I guess it's one of those things, because when we had Bria Grant and, you know, Morgan Peter Brown, they say when work comes, you take it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to stay in Hollywood and you want to remain an actor, sometimes you probably have to do things that aren't going to pay well, that might not be very good, but at least it's enough to keep you going. And maybe that's what these guys are doing. Cause I mean, they're getting up there in age, you know, so they have to find another means. But I mean, I like it because we get good actors in these movies.
I was going to say he actually brings a lot to that captain character. There's a weight that he brings to that role that I don't think he's acting almost on another level than everyone else in the movie, you know. Yeah. And he kind of has the thing going with you know, that one the one older lady that's stocking up on all the gin and stuff. was it her boat or something like that? She has money and she's on the boat. And
yeah, that's the one that's setting that girl up with that really skeezy guy.
Right, right. But she also she gets a thing for our friend Cameron Mitchell here.
Yeah,
we all do.
but yeah, I mean, he's really good. I don't know why the hell I mentioned the Nazi guy, the Hitler guy.
You probably wanted to talk about him. It's fine.
I did. I wanted to shoehorn that guy into the conversation, and I'm trying like. Like, I don't know what that guy's, like, the name was of that character, you know what I mean? Because he's not going to be listed as Hitler guy, but that...
Hitler lookalike.
That character was off-the-wall ridiculous, and you must wonder, like, was it on the script? Like, all right, you're going to have a stereotypical German accent, and you're going to look like Hitler. And you're going to be collecting young women, you know?
Yeah. No, I mean, as probably people are listening, how discombobulated this conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the same thing as this movie.
Yeah, because I was gonna say, it's so fitting.
To actually have, I would say, almost like an intellectual conversation about this movie is like impossible.
No, you can't.
Because I mean, we have just, it's just, like I said, it's a genre mashup. We have just so much stuff going on in this movie that, you know, it's not, I don't think it's made to make sense. It was, you know, let's do a movie. What's the best? What's our resources? What can we do? And let's do it. I mean, and obviously this didn't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the movie obviously bombed. And the director, I think, did one other movie other than that. And that's it.
Yeah. And it ends with a to be continued. Also.
Yeah, because they had a sequel. Amazing. Yeah, and it was funny because, you know, they obviously put that in there after the movie's made.
Yeah.
So did they actually edit all together and be like, all right, let's put the 2B continue because we're going to do a sequel because this is really good.
We got some fucking gold here, guys.
And it's like, no, you don't have – like, I mean – yes, the movie is fantastic. I love it. It's, you know, I am so happy that, you know, a company like Vinegar Syndrome, you know, put this out and it's actually give it a Blu-ray release.
I know.
And that's the hard thing to believe. But that's what I like about Vinegar Syndrome so much is that they, unlike Lionsgate that's putting exists on DVD, they could do DVDs and it probably would be cheaper for them. But they truly love cinema. And you can see that. And they love all types of cinema because we're getting everything from them.
Yeah.
You know, first they started releasing pornography and, you know, nudie movies. But now they're dipping into, you know, everything. So I'm excited to see the route that they go. Maybe they might start resurrecting some classics that aren't goofy or nudie movies.
I think they're already on their way to doing that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, I really hope that, you know, this is a company that we can trust that becomes kind of a Criterion company that's releasing obscurities rather than, you know, prolific films. Like, they are giving the time of day, which I think it's neat because, I mean, also their name's Vinegar Syndrome, which is funny if you guys know what that means.
Brad, yeah, Brad, what is Vinegar Syndrome for our listeners that don't know?
It is with old film. Between all the chemicals and shit, you know, when the film's made and, you know, the type of film that's used. And over time, those films start to basically decompose.
Mm-hmm.
and Vinegar Syndrome, labeled there because that's what they call it. They call it Vinegar Syndrome because of the vinegar and all this other crap in the film itself. It starts to deteriorate and fall apart. So they are going in rescuing these films because there's no hope for them. They're going to just break and die out, and then the print's going to be gone. So they take them, they run them through the wash to get to clean it up the best they can, give it a DVD release, Blu-ray release, and then there it is. And the film lives instead of dying.
Yeah.
Because if no one touches it and it just sits there in a grindhouse container, it's going to be gone and we won't have it anymore. And so it's almost like their name is like a rescue, like they're superheroes. You know,
I like that.
And they're saving these movies one by one, whether you like them or not.
Yeah,
films should never go away.
Yeah,
if a movie goes away, then those people that worked on it, you'll never be able to see it again.
Yeah,
you know, and never, and you know, sometimes a lot of these movies never made it to VHS, and if they did, man, it's just a small little release. So yeah. I don't know. It's a nice thing. I mean, we have all these other companies, you know, like Scream. They're helping out too because they're giving these movies like longevity. They're giving it more time. But Vinegar Syndrome's literally rescuing films from being gone from us, for whether it's porno or what. Like, nothing should go away.
Yeah.
So that's a cool thing. But yeah, Vinegar Syndrome is what they call when the film starts to break down. Because of the oils, the chemicals, everything that's used in order to process it, put it on the film, just sitting there not doing anything.
Yeah. So they restored this from – they did a new 2K restoration from the original camera negative, which is nice when they can get the hold of the camera negative.
It looks good too, by the way.
It does. I'm surprised. I was surprised how good it looked. So the negative was obviously in some pretty good condition. The Blu-ray itself has a couple things. I did not have time to dive into the special feature. They have one kind of little documentary featurette, and then they do it. And then Jim Wynorski does the an audio interview, but they've kind of put it as the commentary.
Mm-hmm.
I did not have a chance to check those out. Did you guys have a chance to with us? Because Wynorski was the finishing editor of the film. It says right here.
Yeah.
Did you guys
get a chance to watch this? He doesn't have like a huge involvement, I don't think.
Right.
Because I want to say the audio interview that they have is pretty short. And
okay.
It's a phone interview.
Oh, okay, so it's not a commentary over the film.
I could be misremembering, but I definitely listened to the one that was listed in the supplements. And
okay, that's the one we're talking about.
It's a short interview with him. He has like some tangential connection to the thing, if I recall.
Okay. Do you guys watch the featurette at all?
No, I didn't get to
Damn
the
it.
Featurette.
We're failing here. We're failing. You know, the thing is, these aren't stacked like a collector's edition, but they have a little bit of things on here, and little some tidbits. So I give Raw Force like a full on recommendation. Like, you need to have this in your collection. I'm gonna say that right now.
Yeah.
Like, that is a must buy.
No. It's a decent film because it's the type of cinema that we're really not used to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that forever because I mean I'm used to this type of thing, but for films to be as crazy and weird as this is, to keep it going and not to get to a boring level,
right,
or it has funny sporadic moments but is clouded and just full of just a bunch of other nonsense that's not good, that's not with this movie. This film actually keeps up its comedy, its hilariousness, its stupidity, everything. Like, it never ends, and that's what I like about it. It's not a boring film. And it's fun by yourself or with a group of friends, preferably with a group of friends, because you get to watch other people's reactions when people break ice with their face.
Oh, man. It's great. Best character ever. He's my favorite. He's my new favorite. I think every film I've watched the past couple weeks, I have like a new favorite.
You going to pick him over Slick?
Dude, I don't know, man. He might be. I mean, he's visually more interesting than Slick, that's for sure.
Well... He doesn't. Yeah, it's hard to beat that guy. As far as look goes,
Slick's amazing though. Yeah, the look is just incredible.
Oh, no, like, this podcast is over. I'm done.
I want that guy to have.
Slick is the man.
I want that guy to star in his own kung fu action movie. Like, he needs to have his own movie.
He was part of the sequel.
Well, it's too bad he doesn't have...
Probably.
Yeah, it's too bad that guy doesn't have more to do in the movie, because you just want to have him... You're just like, whoa, 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 what?
Yeah, where's this guy?
What happened to that dude? Where'd he go? And, you know...
Like, he should have... If they wanted gold, they would have had him go along with them.
I know.
And save the day.
Ugh.
Yeah. No, I wish there was some some extended scenes with him, or... God. I don't know. But when I think about the movie, I think of people... If they've seen Miami Connection, uh-huh. I think that's one touchstone. Maybe like
I think it's better than Miami Connection.
I don't know
because of the craziness. Yeah, yeah.
They both have interesting weird stuff and weird performances. And Dragon Sound's pretty amazing,
well,
especially
Dragon
when they
Sound,
perform.
God,
it's hard to beat that. Yeah. But that said, like that, and like maybe like a little Big Trouble in Little China or something.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, like I have it. I just made this up.
Here we go.
What do you got?
I got it. You just inspired me, Brian. This is an Andy Sedaris movie that never made it.
There
like
you
how
go.
Much like this is like an Andy Sedaris movie that the script was on the floor and this guy was the janitor cleaning up and he came across and he's like, This is gold. This is genius. Because at times, like, the action sequences and everything feels like an Andy Sedaris movie. And if you guys are listening, you don't know who Andy Sedaris is, or have seen any of his films, you're living your life incorrectly. Because Andy Sedaris has made some great off-the-wall films. And I don't know. Like, that's what it feels like. Especially when they get to the beach, get to the island and start fighting and everything. It really becomes, 'cause they have a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
They have a rocket launcher. And like, from what part would a rocket launcher, and there's the thing is Andy Sedaris movies, there's always a rocket launcher that pops up somewhere. So if you have not seen, I recommend Malibu Express and Hard Ticket to Hawaii. And people might have seen clips of Hard Ticket to Hawaii with the Frisbee that has the blades on it. That's from that movie. I know that clip surfaces around online and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is an Andy Sedaris movie. There you go.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
Nice.
For sure.
And with that, gentlemen, let's move into 1980s Christmas Evil.
I really must go now. But now, I want you to remember to stay good boys and girls. Respect your mothers and fathers, and do what they tell you. Obey your teachers, and learn a whole lot. Now, if you do this, I'll make sure you get good presents from me every year. But if you're bad boys and girls, your name goes in the bad boys and girls book. And I'll bring you something horrible.
You better watch out, you better not cry, better not pout, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Santa Claus is coming to town.
Christmas Evil.
Christmas Evil, everybody. Christmas Evil. Now we've been talking about batshit craziness and a really crazy movie that's... I'm surprised we actually talked. We got a good conversation in about Raw Force. I'm glad we did.
Discombobulated and weird.
I'm glad we did, but we were saying before we recorded, like, oh, we're not going to have much to talk about with Raw Force.
yeah, because it's one of those things where you just repeat. Because,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It's so weird. Like, where do you go from there?
Yeah.
But anyways.
Christmas Evil operates on a whole other level, and I was actually shocked that I kind of had the reaction to it that I did. it's, you know, when you're watching these, you know, Christmas horror type movies and Oh Killer Santa Claus movies and stuff like that, you kind of accept, or you expect something, I think, a little more campy. And I think at first I was expecting, oh, this is just gonna be a campy, you know, 80s movie. Boy, was I wrong. Like, this is almost like the documenting of a guy's psychological breakdown during the Christmas season and how it plays out, you know?
Yeah.
I think I was shocked that it actually had as much weight as it did. It was directed by Lewis Jackson, and I don't recognize any of the actors.
What?
In the film? Oh no! Holy shit! No! Never mind. Jeffrey DeMunn. I take the back. Yeah, he's the only one that I recognize. I was like, holy shit! That's the guy with the beard on Walking Dead.
There's a shit
amongst
ton.
Other things.
There's a shit ton of people in this film that it's one of those other ones that's, I mean, there's of course Harry that is played by Brandon Maggart, who's been in, you know, Dressed to Kill. Okay. He was in The World According to Garp. He was, what was the movie he was in after this?
See, I knew Brad would have a better
He's but yeah, he plays Cleveland Sam in Dressed to Kill. So, I mean, he's been in some stuff. The woman from, shit, what's the TV show with Tim Allen?
Home Improvement.
Yeah, Patricia Richardson is in this movie. She plays the mother of the little boy that he's terrifying at the window. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
She's in this. Of course. Mark Marigold, he's one of the men that brings him into the party that's going on, where mm-hmm. he actually is nice and down to earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's in this, and then one of my favorite people, I guess her name is Rutanya Alda. She's played, you know, she played in Deer Hunter. She was in, Return. She was in, I mean, she was just in a movie that we just talked about. She was in The Dark Half.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We just talked about that. But I mean, she's one of those women that shows up a lot in horror films. I mean, she was in like Amityville 2, Girls Night Out, The Stuff. She's a notable horror film actress.
Okay. Yeah. I recognize her.
She has a kind of a bit part, but that's the thing is a lot of the more famous people or that have went on to do different things. Oh yeah, Detective Gleason that's in it is played by Raymond Barry, who's in, you know, he was in a shit ton, Little Children, fucking Born on the 4th of July.
I recognize him. I guess I didn't recognize him younger.
He plays a lot of comedies too. So, but anyways, I think it's one of these films that has like a bunch of people that pop up every once in a while. They might not be notable household names, but they're recognizable faces.
Okay, yeah.
I really like Diane Hall. She plays Jeffrey DeMunn.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
she's cute.
Pretty.
Yeah, she's real pretty. She's in a movie I love called Aloha, Bobby and Rose, and it's her and Paul and Matt. It's kind of a low key Bonnie and Clyde. It's set in the '70s, but it's not really Bonnie and Clyde. It's just like these two go on a date and it kind of goes bad but they're great together. And I've just always had a crush on her since then. So she's really good in this.
Did you know she teaches method acting in Los Angeles?
I did not, but that is really cool.
Pretty awesome.
That's funny. Yeah.
So the setup to Christmas Evil is basically our main character as a child had a traumatic experience as a kid on Christmas Eve when he saw my kids are in the other room. His dad dressed up as Santa Claus, getting some sexy time or whatever with his wife.
Yeah.
And that kind of leaves a mark, that he carries with him the rest of his life. And so now he's older and he's loves Christmas like more than usual and loves Santa Claus. And he's
a little too much.
He
fetishizes. I mean, John Waters says it in the commentary, and it's totally true. He totally fetishizes.
John Waters' commentary is amazing.
It's good. I mean, there's a point where he water start, like, and Lewis Jackson even like interjects like his own commentary on the commentary at one point where he's like, yeah, I think John forgot we were doing a commentary here, and so he's just watching the movie. And so it's over stuff where John Waters is just kind of snickering at the movie or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway,
no,
yeah, he...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
But he talks about the fetishizing.
That's exactly
and like,
right.
The scene where you see Brandon Maggard's character's house, and like it's got like... It's like papered with, you know, Christmas like related pictures and knickknacks, and
my mom has all that stuff. By the way. No, I'm not. That's not a joke.
No, that's
like,
cool.
Like the pictures. I mean, not the actual pictures, but those pictures are obviously like iconic figurines that have been mass produced. My mom has all that shit.
Wow,
awesome.
It's so because watching this movie as a kid, my mom pointed out. She's like, "Oh my God, I have all that stuff." And I'm like, yeah, Mom. That's weird, right? No. Okay.
So. I love how good I think Brandon Maggart is like really good in this movie.
Great.
Oh, he's perfect, yeah.
You know, like and listening to the commentary, Lewis Jackson does that thing that I really kind of hate that you hear directors do sometimes where he comes in like, cause there's three commentaries. Mm-hmm. I think they're all taken from different releases, but the one that's him solo, he does that thing where he goes, yeah, I wanted this to be a black comedy and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, bullshit, dude, that is bullshit. There's no way that you may say that you're playing some of this for dark, but his performance is so, nuanced. Mm-hmm. He does so much stuff that's like little tiny like ticks, and you could laugh at it, I guess, but I just think he's such a sad, you know, empathetic dude that I just think it's a hard movie to laugh at a certain point.
Yeah, there's a psychological aspect of this movie where it's a downfall of somebody's life.
Yeah.
If you find that funny, then okay. But like, there's no laughing in this movie because it's and I think this movie's great because it doesn't go too far on the sinister side,
right?
But it maintains this like plateau of like, you know, it plateaus at one point where it just becomes just a sad story of this guy who completely just loses it,
right?
Yeah. You know. And
you empathize with him, which is ridiculous. Yeah. You know, you feel – you kind of can understand –
It's a drama.
Yeah.
It's a drama at times.
Yeah.
Aside from the slashing, but, like, it's just a sad story of this guy who loves Santa, loves the holidays, but is traumatized by this event that happened in his life that wasn't, like, that detrimental – as we see it, but to him, it really, really affected him, something so small. So psychologically, this has fucked him up. And now he just goes on a rampage, but we don't really ever get that full on, like, what's going on? Like, why are you so much like this? But that's when it becomes kind of a drama because we are confused as much as he is.
Well, and he has moments where he clearly is having regret and is like, you know, something will happen, something crazy, not crazy, but, you know, he'll go nuts for a moment and somebody will get hurt or worse. And then I think after that, you see that moment of, oh, shit, I totally just did that.
The makeup's great with his face because he
starts
off. I mean, he's an older actor to begin with, but by the time like this movie's over, he looks so stressed out and fucked up.
Yeah.
That, because I mean, yeah, his face is a little dirty from all the stuff he's going through, but man, he just looks like he aged like 30 years.
There's something in his eyes, and that's where you can tell you have
hurt and pain is what it is.
A fantastic actor when they can convey all the events that have gone throughout the entire movie that are weighing them down. When they can convey that solely through their eyes, it's incredible. Like I was shocked at how good this movie operated on a dramatic level. I wasn't expecting that at all. You know,
no, especially early on when you've got scenes of him like on the top of his building, like spying on all the kids. Like that's a part where I can go, okay, I can see how somebody thinks this movie's a little crazy. Cause obviously you couldn't do a scene like that now without it being really, I mean, it plays pretty weird anyway. Cause he's like got his binoculars out. He's looking at all the kids and kind of making notes like, oh, this kid's being good. Oh, that kid's looking at Hustler. He's going on the bad list and he's got his good list and bad list. So that seems really nutty. But I think
it never goes that, it never goes that length of being like the movie is extremely sleazy.
Yeah.
Like it's dirty and sleazy, but it never goes that route of just being gross.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I really like.
Right.
Because no, I mean, it could have very easily been to a gross level how he is with the kids.
Yeah. At first I thought that's where it was going to go. And I mean, this is my first time watching it. So I'm experiencing all this for the first time and I'm seeing him with his naughty list and good list. And I was like, oh man, this is going to go dark. You know, I was like kind of,
it's dark, but it's in a different,
right.
It's a different aspect.
I think I was expecting it to go darker, you know, maniac dark, you know what I mean?
I was thinking, you know, like Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, where you have like just unhinged, nutty performances. Uh-huh. I was thinking it was going to be like that, and I thought it was the first time for you. I think so because I thought I had seen it, but I may have confused it with another movie because I was like, I don't remember
Growing
a movie.
Up with No Christmas.
Yeah, maybe that because
gets it confused with that one
because I don't remember seeing a movie like this that was so dramatic and that affected me. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, and maybe that's where I am now that I would just look at a movie like that differently. But I don't think I'd seen it. I honestly don't think I'd seen it. So yeah. I'm with you, Sean. It just totally got me in the different way. There's just so much stuff in it though, like down to his homemade Santa costume, which is
amazing.
It's kind of sad and pathetic because it looks kind of like a dress, you know, and not in a right. Like I want to make fun of him way, but like it hangs down over, you know, his hips in this certain way that I don't know. It just looks kind of sad, you know, but he's so committed to. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing is that it starts off like that. And this is something that I've grew up on this movie. I've seen this movie countless times. This is one of my go-tos every Christmas. What I like about it, and more I watch it, it's like he does that. Like he makes his suit. But in the next scene, his suit changes because it begins to fit him. Just kind of like how his beard.
Yeah.
Like he puts the beard on and it's fake. But when he looks in the mirror, it's real.
Yeah, no, it's true. It does look like way better than it looks like professional,
and
you know.
When he puts on his suit, it like hangs off of him. He like puts on his wig and it's like all frizzy. But when he goes outside, if you notice, everything changes. Like it fits him a little bit better. His boots change because that's how he sees himself. Like we see it as kind of like, you know, this weird like outfit that he's putting together like the best he can because he obviously doesn't have any whatever sewing past history.
Yeah.
And he can't. He's playing everything. When he expresses, it's more fitting. He feels a little bit better. He becomes in his eyes. But to us, I mean, we kind of still see it as that, but like, when he looks himself in the mirror, like his beard, that's one of my favorite scenes of the movie is when he puts on that beard and it looks super fake. But when we look at it in the mirror, he like tugs on it really, really hard and he can't get it off because it's a real beard.
Yeah.
You know, and I that's what I really like about the movie because we see it's like two parallel, visions going through. We see him break down and become Santa Claus, and he really truly believes he is Santa Claus. On the other hand, we just see this crazy guy,
right?
That's losing it. You know, I really dig that quite a bit, and I think a lot of that solidifies at the end of the film. That's very confusing for most people, probably, but I actually think the ending is one of the most important parts, of course, in the movie. I mean, most endings are, but. There's so much to be said with that ending scene that it's like very confusing for most. Cause I know a lot of people say, oh my God, this movie's weird, but it's weird to you because you're looking at it as someone else. I don't want to give the ending away, of course, but there's something very, very hidden at the ending. That's very important in this movie. And we'll talk about it after we stop recording because I want to hear your guys' opinion, but it's very special. So,
yeah, no, that ending makes more sense now when you talk about the subjective nature. I think the other thing was I get so caught up in it as like this almost art house drama that I lose my perspective on it as it being from his point of view, like you say, Brad, which totally makes sense. And it makes the ending make more sense, too. But I can't believe that Lewis Jackson would try and pull a – black comedy card, because I mean, you listen to him talk about the care that he took in making this movie. I mean, he storyboarded every shot meticulously, apparently.
And it looks good too. Yeah, the story, it does. They actually have part of the storyboards on, on the Blu-ray. And
yeah,
go ahead and finish.
Well, I mean, but and he sought out this French cinematographer who worked on like Alain René movies. I mean, he just he clearly had, like, maybe the dude took himself too seriously. Regardless, he made an interesting movie in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But for you to sort of backpedal on it and kind of, because some people maybe can't see it as a camp festival, which, again, I still don't fully get. And I'm fully on board with campy movies, and I don't mind. I'm not above laughing at a campy movie, but I just don't get how you could try and claim that now, you know? Yeah. I just don't. I mean,
think it's one of those with, interject of how that happens. I think he's falling short of what this film has been. It's known as a Christmas slasher. And the route that this movie has taken, it's taken that goofy route. And I think he almost backpedals. That's what it feels like.
He totally is. He totally is.
He backpedals like, that's what I was trying to do. No, dude, you were making an in-depth psychological horror film about just obviously about a man's breakdown. And then the film didn't do what he wanted it to, probably.
And it wasn't received well. It wasn't received well. Yeah.
It wasn't received as like how he thought. So then it's like, oh, this movie is known as a cult classic horror film. Yeah. It's very dark. It's a very dark comedy. I just think he was almost, it feels like maybe he might be embarrassed to call it a work of art, and it is. Because it's, I mean, all movies are, but
from his point of view, you sound like kind of a pretentious ass, I guess, if you do. And so you're kind of damned if you do and damned if you don't, you know what I mean? But you can just tell when he's describing how he went about it. You're like, okay, dude, come on. You were really serious about this movie. This was a big deal to you. And it obviously screwed you up that it didn't do well, which I totally understand. Cause he didn't make, I don't think, almost any other movies other than this. There's like very little on his filmography, if I'm recalling.
I don't remember his name. I mean, I don't know what else he's done, but
he only has 3 directing credits on IMDb.
Yeah, I mean, he did very little.
After Christmas Evil, there's nothing. He produced. He's produced one thing. In 2003, he was an associate producer of The Ghouls, but Christmas Evil was pretty much his last journey into film.
Yeah, I just think it's one of those movies you watch and you go, okay, this is somebody's vision. You know, like we use that word a lot, but you can just go, here's a guy that had this concept and really just cultivated and cared for it. And, you know, and he talks about losing the rights to the movie because he had to sell points to get it made and then struggling to get it back. Apparently, he only got it back within the last 5-10 years or something. I don't know. So it clearly is very special to him. And it shows, man. It shows in the directing that he did and the performance that he got. I don't know. I just think, like I said, it's a surprise. And I think people that haven't seen it, there's probably not a lot of our listeners that haven't, but it's definitely worth a look from a different point of view other than, you know, let's sit down and have a campy fun time.
Yeah, it's not that at all. It's not that at all. Like it's almost like it's a character study of.
Totally.
You know, of someone who's a bit obsessive compulsive, has some OCD issues and some past psychological issues that all come to a head on this one night. And because of he goes over the line, you know, as far as his actions go, he goes over the line and he almost can't he can't backpedal. He can't go back. He almost has to go full on and steamroll to the end, even though you can tell he's kind of fighting these demons, you know, not literally demons, but I mean his inner
Night
demons
of the demons,
his inner demons of should I go further? And then there's a psychological break that happens, but I wouldn't consider this a slasher at all. You know, it's a psychological, you know, drama with some horror type elements, but we've seen this type of, this stuff in more we'd call more kind of drama thrillers, you know. It just seems it's. I mean, they're calling it Christmas Evil. The original
which is a title he hates, by the way.
Right. The original title is You Better Watch Out, and it gets lumped into all these horror movies, but I think it's more of a psychological thriller than anything, because it's not exceedingly gory. It's he's not technically stalking people and taking them out. It's I think the violence seems to happen very it just kind of comes out of nowhere. Like, it's not necessarily 100% premeditated, you know. Like I said, until the one scene happens, that kind of is the point of no return for him.
Yeah,
I mean, I do see a certain, like, I mean, I think this is a very serious psychological horror film, but I mean, if you step back and you look at it as try to watch it as a comedy, there are times that you might find humor in it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I can see where that comes from, because I mean, I've watched, because when I first watched, I watched it as a slasher, and then, you know, because that was a few years ago, and then later on, you know, I watched it as a psychological horror film. I watched it as a comedy. I've watched it other ways, and you know, it can be. I think it could be perceived different, obviously, many ways. So it's funny to hear people after they watch it. What do they say?
Yeah.
Like, do they actually find this funny? Do they find it psychological horror film? And what's really good about it is that there's on the special features, there's preview cards from the actual release of what the people's age, their sex, and what they thought about the movie, and they rate it poor. And everything is mostly poor. People didn't like it, but that actually says something, because every once in a while there's one, and it's mostly all women, that pop up and say, you know, this was a good psychological horror film.
Nice.
And it was funny that, you know, obviously that's the way it was received, all these different ways. And I think that's kind of cool about this movie, because that's still kind of how it is today. Some people look at it as a Christmas slasher. Some people look at it as maybe a dark comedy.
John Waters, clearly, in his commentary with Jackson, he has some serious questions for him, but you can hear him snickering, and he clearly thinks, you know, he's got a certain take on certain kinds of movies. He obviously is a fan of camp. It comes in his movies and the movies he likes. So his perspective is different than, say, my perspective on it.
Yeah, I mean, John Waters would definitely know gritty, the you know, sleazy cinema, because I mean, he's the king of it.
Sure.
But, you know, it's really – the John Waters commentary is very awesome, because we get to see it through the eyes of somebody that makes these types of films. Hmm. And I don't know. I think the commentary with him is definitely one of the best special features on this Blu-ray, because it gives us – it sheds new light on everything, a different aspect.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's cool. It's a cool – overall, like, hats off to Vinegar Syndrome. Granted, it's a lot, almost all this material is – culled from other releases, but they put it all together in one. I mean, you've got some Synapse stuff commentary wise, because there's a Lewis Jackson commentary, there's a Lewis Jackson and Brandon Maggart commentary, and then there's a John Waters commentary, and there's even like the you know what I really liked? You're right, Brad, that's the best one probably, that commentary, but I really liked the audition tapes, because there's so many crazy actors that they got to try out for this movie. Like Jo Beth Williams, Lindsay Krause, Michael Beck.
Michael Beck would have been amazing.
Yeah, dude. You got it. There's so much. I
didn't even watch that. That's the one thing I skipped over, because I'm not too big on audition tapes. But neither. Who was Michael Beck trying out for?
He was. I think he was going to do the Jeffrey DeMunn part. I think I'm forgetting what he was auditioning for, but
he would have been good in anything, dude. He would have been good as Santa.
Oh, dude, no doubt. I would love to see a Michael Beck. Yeah, no. David Rash, Sledgehammer, has an audition. You know. Anyway, I'm not to get too sidetracked, but we were talking about the special features. But I just think that they did such a nice job with this whole, I mean, they did a 4K transfer, a 4K scan of the movie for this, and that commentary, like you said, Brad, it really gives a great an alternate perspective. Like, I wish every disc possible could have like another director who's a fan of the movie talking with the director. I just think that's always super cool.
I love those kind of commentaries.
Yeah, I mean, because it's unique, and I like that this actually got another release and is probably going to be a little bit more popular. But it's going to be nice to, and plus, if you're a listener and you watch this movie because of this episode, or you already know about this movie, tell us how you perceive it, because it's interesting to hear after people watch this what they really thought.
Yeah.
Because it hits everything. It's not a genre mashup movie. It's just it's funny to watch, and I think that says something psychologically about a lot of people when they watch a movie. How does it first affect them? How does it how do they receive it? Do they feel good? Do they feel bad? Do they feel dirty? Mm-hmm. So that's something to say. I don't know. So yeah. Maybe the director does see it as a dark comedy. Maybe that's his viewing, and yeah. That's his vision. But I mean, obviously we don't see it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's bizarre. Well, it really is.
I like that it's played for the most part straight, and it's not tongue in cheek. It's not trying to be campy. He approaches the film as a real film. He got a really a good cinematographer. I like the fact that we can kind of sympathize with the main character here, and it's his movie. He's not some secret killer. Like, it's his movie. He's the main character. He's the one that we're following through this whole journey. And I love the scene where he gets brought, like you brought up earlier, he gets brought into the party, and you kind of see he could be a great guy. Like, he's passionate about Christmas, like, you know, but then right at the end, he kind of twists the knife a little bit and says, but if you're bad,
you know. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the dude
things.
Is just.
I'll bring you bad things. You
know? Oh yeah. My gosh! And that gets all of a sudden just a tad bit off the wall, uncomfortable, and you can just feel the uncomfortableness. We've all been in weird, uncomfortable situations. I probably have more than anyone else on the show. I don't know, but you can kind of you can feel just the you can almost hear a pin drop. You know, it just gets quiet, and it's such a I feel it's such a real moment because I've been in those situations.
Apparently you've been in a lot of these situations.
I've been in moments where there's a point in high school where I used to announce basketball games. I'd be like, so and so, you know, number 23, whatever. I would announce them coming in, and There was a parent night where I had to introduce all the players and their parents. Well, I went through the entire girls team, and then I'm going through the guys team, and five people in, I realize it gets really quiet, and I realize that I'm saying, like, you know, Justin Anderson, daughter of, and it's just, maybe I connected with that scene more because of that, but I was just like, oh my God, like, you know, this guy doesn't realize he's being creepy, but everyone else can sense it. When I was in that situation, I was just, you know, had no idea that I would say this, and everyone else in this entire stadium knew what was up, and everyone's looking at me, you know. So
that explains a lot.
I empathized. I think I empathized with this character a little bit. Not saying that I would go and murder everyone who was staring at me or anything like that, but, you know. Maybe a couple people, you sick bastards. I'm just kidding. I don't have any psychological issues at all.
wow. Okay.
but yeah, you know, it's, I don't know. I really love this movie. I love being surprised. We see so many movies, and it's refreshing when we're surprised by something that caught off guard. I was caught off guard by Christmas Evil, and this is going to be, you know, this will be added to my yearly viewing stack for sure. So
yeah, it's been a long time it's been in mine. Yeah. I mean, I really really dig this movie on many many levels, and I kind of, you know, I grew up with it.
Yeah.
So I got to watch it in all these different aspects and everything, because I revisit it every once in a while, you know. I mean, it's been I guess yearly. I guess it was every once in a while because I pull it. Yeah, I mean there's a certain amount of Christmas movies that I watch every Christmas that have really, you know, that I really truly like, and I really really like this movie because, like I said, it's very diverse. It hits on many levels, and I think it's a fun thing. Not too many movies do that.
Cool. So, well, if you guys don't mind, you want to? I feel like we can recommend Christmas Evil.
Totally.
I think this is
a must buy.
I think, yeah. And with that, I wanted you just brought up you have your favorite Christmas movies you watch every year. I wanted to take a few minutes here before we end the show to kind of go over our favorite Christmas movies that we watch every year. And it's not, I don't think we have to relegate it to just horror, but I'll start with you, Brad, because I want to hear what you watch every year. I'm sure it's just a fucked up shit that you watch every year, Christmas.
Because
you have no soul, but
it's true. No, I agree with you. It's one of my favorite, probably my top 20 films of all time, and one of my all time favorite Christmas flick. And I watch it every year, and I even watch it throughout the year. Sometimes is Black Christmas. Black Christmas was made in like 1974. And it's just so mean. It's so way before its time, and just so sinister. And I just really, really like it. And it's a lot of movies borrowed quite a few things from this movie. And I've always loved Black Christmas, and it still to this day it seems like that's kind of an underseen movie, even though all the notoriety it gets, and even the remake that came out. You know, it's not really a remake at times, but no, I've always really dug that movie. Gremlins is a movie that I always revisit because it's just that was a family movie for us. We would get around and watch that movie as a family. You know, and it was like one of my very first horror films as well. When I was very very young. You know, before I started watching rated R movies, I actually did watch little PG-13 movies, and that was one of them. So I've always dug that movie quite a bit. Christmas Vacation, of course, that's a classic with everybody. Mm-hmm. I guess at times I kind of get burnt out on that movie because you kind of get the jokes. You kind of know, like, it's just, I mean, it's played everywhere. It's one of those things that's like a more well-known to everybody film. There's actually a Spanish film directed by the guys that did REC. It's just one of them. It's called Xmas Tale. And it's about a bunch, and it's a perfect like throwback 80s movie where a bunch of kids they find a woman in a hole. She fell down, and she's in a Santa suit, and they slowly realize that she robbed a bank, and they basically hold her captive. And there's something secret about her, and it becomes a slasher with little kids, and it's really, 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 really good. A short film that's always fun to watch is Jason Eisner's Trevenge.
Oh yeah,
you know that's fun. I love Rare Exports. I guess Rare Exports is Swedish, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
yeah. It's kind of like a little mythos of Santa and things like that. That's a fun movie. Stephen C. Miller's, loosely remake, Silent Night, is a lot of fun. The original Silent Night, I always say the trilogy was the best. Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2 is obviously just rehashing one most of the part. Christmas Evil was this. Don't Open Till Christmas. Kino just released To All a Good Night, which I really, really dig. Did you watch Saint?
Oh, not yet, man. It's right here.
Oh, that one's always Saint always Nick. Fun. Yeah, that's became kind of a classic for me in the past few years. And then, that's pretty much all I revisit time and time again. The other stuff, I have some other favorite Christmas movies, but those are the ones that I constantly revisit. Nice. So,
all right, I'll go ahead and burn through mine, and then I'll give Brian
the torch. Burn it down.
So real quickly, I mean, mine stuff is kind of more standard. Beginning in October and through Christmas, we're watching Nightmare Before Christmas a lot. That's become a favorite of the kids. And a lot of the stuff is stuff I watch with the kids, stuff I watch with myself, and I'll let you know what I'm watching with the kids, so you don't think I'm letting them watch anything ridiculous. But the kind of the go-tos are Nightmare Before Christmas. Scrooged has been a favorite of mine. I saw that in the theater.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
Gremlins, of course, is every year, and that I may introduce that to the kids this year. I'm thinking about it. That movie fucked me up as a kid. Like, I remember being on the floor of the theater, like, just terrified and crying the whole last act of the movie.
Well, yeah, especially that last line that Peltzer has where he's like under your bed and stuff. I mean, that I just like, that's just, it's not necessarily mean, but I've always like, when I looked back on it, like, I was like, that's kind of messed up, yeah, but in a good way.
I remember the scene that I lost my shit as a kid was when the old lady was going up. She went up the stairs and that thing, and the gremlins messed it up, so she goes flying out the window. Like, I think I wasn't expecting people to die, and all of a sudden, like, this woman, yeah, she's kind of a bitch, but all of a sudden she's dead because of these things. Like, it was like, that was my shit got real moment. And I lost it, man. And it was my parents. I confronted my parents. I'm like, why'd you guys let me stay through the whole movie? And my mom goes, that was your pick. You had to learn your lesson.
Nice.
So Gremlins, of course, I'm not scared of that movie anymore. It's become a favorite. Christmas Vacation, religiously every year. For me, never gets old. We introduced Home Alone to the kids last year, and then that's
a favorite. Home Alone's one of mine too, yeah.
That's great.
Christmas Carol with George C. Scott. I think that was a TV movie, I think. But that version has always been my favorite, and I love, it's kind of darker in tone. That's why I really liked it. And then what else have I got here? Elf, of course. Elf is a, we just watched it last night.
And, with the Will Ferrell movie?
Yeah, man. It's fantastic. Christmas Story, we don't watch it every year, but we watched it as a family for the first time last year, and I think that was the only time and last time my wife will ever watch that. But that's an interesting movie.
She wasn't a fan?
It's
just okay.
It's an interesting movie. Like, talk about dark comedy. That has some weird dark comedy aspects to it, you know? It's not slapstick hilarious. It's everyone's a bit off, you know, and it's an interesting movie to, I think, to revisit as an adult, because I always saw bits and pieces as a kid. And then Die Hard, I watch every year. And then finally, the only horror stuff I really watch is Rare Exports, is the only one I've really visited. I've seen some of the movies we'll be talking about, but I actually have never seen the original Silent Night, Deadly Night, so I'll be excited to when we cover that to share
that
my thoughts on that.
Fucked up. Yeah.
And finally, Chuck Norris's Invasion USA.
Nice.
Which takes place on Christmas. Christmas Evil will be added to that list.
There you go.
So, I'm sure Brian has some more tasteful and classy.
I guess. I like all the stuff you guys are talking about. I mean, I have not yet seen Rare Exports. I have the Blu-ray, and I've been meaning this year, maybe the year to finally.
It's worth a watch, man.
For sure. No, I picked it up when it was on sale. I want to say a couple years ago, and I still haven't. So this might be the year. Some that I like more in the last 5-6 years. There's a few classic ones that I dig. There's one called Holiday Affair with Robert Mitchum and Janet Leigh, where, like, you know, she's a single mom with a little boy, which, you know, I really relate to. I mean, that's what the situation I was in when I met my wife, and it's she's with him, and she's got a boyfriend, but then she meets Robert Mitchum at a toy store. He's working for the holidays, and she ends up kind of getting him fired. And so they kind of hit it off. It's a cute movie, and I love Mitchum, and she's really good too. So that's one I like. There's one called It Happened on Fifth Avenue, which is I think I found that through another podcast. This guy Alonzo Duraldi he's a critic, but he's got a book called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas, and it's got lots of interesting obscurities. And this is one that he had recommended. It's basically like this homeless dude goes to this rich guy's house, and this rich guy every, you know, winter moves out of his house and goes, I don't know, to Miami or somewhere. And so this guy finds a way into the dude's house and just starts living there. And then his daughter comes home, but she doesn't want to make this homeless guy feel bad. So she pretends not to be the daughter, and then more people end up in the house, and you know, he's pretending to be the rich man. It's really interesting. It's just kind of a silly movie, but I like that one. There's one called Comfort and Joy, which this British director, Bill Forsyth, did, where this guy gets himself entangled with like two warring, basically mafia factions that run ice cream companies. which sounds weird, but it's fun. And then I found this new exclusive TCM shop Blu-ray of a movie called Remember the Night, which has got Fred McMurray and Barbara Stanwyck reunited after Double Indemnity. Basically, she's like, he's a cop, and he picks her up, arrests her for something, and she's all cynical about Christmas, and he ends up taking her home to his family. And, you know, she loosens up about it, basically. But it's written by Preston Sturges. It's pretty good. And they just put out an exclusive Blu-ray at TCM Shop, so I'm getting that. Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas, a little Muppet action. That's a fun one. And then, you know, there's like a couple set at Christmas movies that I sometimes watch, like Kiss Kiss Bang Bang or Better Off Dead or even The Sure Thing, if you want to double up on Cusack movies.
Oh, nice.
And this year, I think I might go back to The Ref. I haven't seen The Ref in a long time.
That's a fun movie.
Yeah, it's good stuff. I remember liking it a lot. So anyway,
Larry's always a fun watch.
Yeah, man. So that's my list for, you know, short list for the year.
I'm surprised Santa Claus Conquers the Martians wasn't in any of our lists.
That movie is something else.
awesome. Well, I'm excited. I think, you know, December's fun. We always get into the Christmas spirit at our place, and so it's nice. It's nice to, you know, it's fun to celebrate and watch these movies. I love kind of seeking out kind of off the wall stuff, and I always try to at least slip one unexpected kind of Christmas movie into my viewing. So I'm gonna try. Brian, you have a great list. I'm gonna try to get to some of those.
Yeah, let me know if you see them, if you like them at all.
Yeah,
definitely. Emmett's Jug Band is good for the kids.
Okay, cool. Cool, good. And if you guys listening, if you guys have your favorites for the season, we would love to hear, you know, what you guys watch. So you can always drop us a line. The email is readme@thescreamcast.com. You can go to thescreamcast.com and click the contact button and drop us a line. We'd love to hear your lists too, and throughout the year we'll read, you know, maybe get to some of those lists. I wanted to mention our Indiegogo of the t-shirts. All those orders, most of them, except for a couple special orders we had to do, have gone out. And if you missed out on that, you can buy our t-shirt over at thescreamcast.com in, I think it's shop or something like that. So you can grab that there. And the next few shows I'll be listing off are... I wasn't prepared for today, but if you got the deluxe or super deluxe package, I said that I will start, you know, I'll name you guys and your companies or your blogs and stuff like that. So we will start doing that next show. And of course, the music's brought to you by Wolfmen of Mars. They created the music for the show. And we're at oneofus.net now. So check the show out over there and check out all their great podcasts over there. And I think I've hit all the announcements I need to get every single show. I'm trying to be better about this stuff. anyway.
You do well.
Any parting thoughts, gentlemen, before we close the show up?
Buy everything. Buy everything is Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah, no, definitely. Vinegar Syndrome is one that's a great little company, and I think people that...
Yeah.
should pay more attention to if they don't already.
Well, I mean, when we started this podcast, I had no idea who Vinegar Syndrome was, and throughout, you know, since February, we started this in February, and they've become kind of what I was expecting Scream Factory to become, and it's interesting how the tides have turned a little bit, but yeah, they're definitely. Brad, do you have any idea of like what their lineup for 2015 is? I know that they have.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of things. I'm sure that they're working on quite a bit, because they've even promised like this next year is going to be probably double or triple what they did this year. Because they're making money. So I know that Demonoid, Madman Mars, a few of the Don't Go Into the Woods, those are all getting Blu-ray releases. But I imagine they got a lot of things like in the works, especially since their horror titles have kind of blown up and did really well. I think they're probably going to try to go after more than more like that. And which I'm super excited about, because the route that these guys are going is that we might get, I might get more obscure titles that I love rather than Pumpkinhead on Blu-ray.
Come on.
Well, dude, I like Pumpkinhead, but how many releases have Pumpkinhead had?
This is like, a Blu-ray release, man. It's a Blu-ray release.
Yeah, and it doesn't look that good.
Oh, come on. I haven't watched it yet.
But, you know, it's I'm liking that, because I'm still holding out for October Blood on Blu-ray. Even though Lionsgate owns it, I don't know. Maybe something might happen. So, hopefully. I don't know.
But yeah, they're a company to watch. Don't go on their website at work, because there is some naughty bits. I learned that lesson. I had to click away when somebody walked up to my desk once. Not that I go – if a coworker's listening, not that I visit any websites at all at work. but yeah, they're great. I'm glad to see them kind of diving into more things than 70s porn, because that would not go over well in my house. All right. Well, with that said, enough of my personal shit, everybody. I think that's it. Brian, so glad to have you back on the show, man.
Yeah, man, that was fun.
We have missed your soft and sultry voice.
Oh, well, thank you.
In our ears. Hopefully it happens
again. It was a
pleasure
to be back, man. Great discussion.
Yeah, hopefully it happens again sooner than later. Like I said, all month long here, the next three shows we'll be covering some sort of Christmas genre title, as well as
maybe some back titles. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll fit in some back titles, so we'll have a little bit of two movies a show. I think that works out pretty good. Run a little bit longer than normal, but I think it's worth it. And with that, like I said, go to oneofus.net, listen to all their other podcasts, and you can subscribe to their feed in iTunes and hear all of their podcasts, which I would recommend. Or you can find us standalone in iTunes as well if you just want to hear our show. With that, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
See ya.
Later.
Oh, don't tell me you're leaving. The party's just begun.
Beasley, go lay down.
Hey, Brad, you tell that bitch to lay down.
You see your sister? She's laying down. Go lay down.
Whoa.
Sorry, dudes. Yeah, my neighbor, for some reason, was just like standing in his driveway.
Son of a bitch.
Run over a sprinkler.
No, different neighbor.
Show him who's boss. The neighbor's probably weirded out by you sitting in your car.
Probably. He's probably like, what the hell's he doing, dude? That's weird.
He's been in his car for over an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just sitting there talking to himself. Dude, are we almost at episode 40? Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Alright, 39. So that means next episode is going to be in episode 40, Brad. We got to bring out the hookers.
Yeah.
Alright. Oh, here we go.